You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Wednesday, November 14th. I am Chris Manning, your host from ThroughTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. Today is a different type of show than I was expecting to record, and in a good way. The Cavs beat the Hornets last night, their best win of the season out of two, so take that for what it is, but a very impressive performance from the Cavs. So in today's show, we're going to talk about that win, then do the first edition of It's Not All That Bad, and then we're going to talk about the Wizards with Ben Mahitch from Bullets Forever and The Step Back. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show, and you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Rights. As a reminder, we are going to be running some new segments on this show. Mondays will be the weekly check-in on Colin Sexton. Tuesday will be the weekly check-in on Jetty Osman in the Jetty order. On Wednesday, it will be It's Not All That Bad, 10 minutes of something positive going on with the Cavs. Thursday, Tactics Thursday, 10 to 15 minutes of tactics talk. Tomorrow we'll be talking about two big lineups that the Cavs are maybe going to have to play right now, or maybe not based on tonight, with Mike Savigano. And then Friday's Draft Prospect Friday. This week, Zion Williamson with Trevor Magnani from Fear the Sword and The Step Back. So, first segment, Cavs beat the Charlotte Hornets. Normally, we do, obviously, the good and the bad from a game. Not a lot of bad from this game. This easily was the most fun performance of the Cavs season for them. I think, obviously, you know, there's a lot of injuries right now. There's no Kyle Korver. There's no Kevin Love. No Sam Decker. No George Hill. Missing a lot of guys that are rotation pieces. Colin Sexton, Jetty Osman's out as well. He's maybe the most fun Cav for a variety of reasons. But this was just a fun Cavs performance. They come out with 38 points in that first quarter. And they lead. They win every quarter in this game. With that first quarter really being the difference. A 15-point advantage. They hold Charlotte to 34.7% shooting. And when you run down the list of performances, just so many different guys had really good nights. First, for starters, Tristan Thompson was the best player on the floor in this game, which is a weird thing to say in 2018, but here we are. 28 minutes for Tristan, 5-6 from the field, tied a career high with 21 rebounds, 13 on defense, 8 on offense for him, 11 points, had 5 assists as well. So a really, really good game from Tristan was just crushing the Hornets on the glass and looked like vintage Tristan Thompson. We're going to talk more about him in the silver linings part of this podcast in segment two, but he was outstanding, and he just continues to look so good. Sexton only shot 7 of 18 in this game, but he made some tough finishes at the rim. He was getting those flexes and was having fun out there, and he was kind of just having like a very joyous performance. Larry Nance Jr. was not perfect in this game. But number one, he made a three-pointer, took two, made one, the first he's made of his career. He's now, in his this season, he's now 1 of 10 on the year. 3-6 from the field, had a nice putback on a Sexton miss. Had 12 rebounds, had a block. Is still not quite where you'd want him to be, but looked better. J.R. Smith had a plus-minus of plus 26. Hit three threes, pretty good game for him. Rodney Hood, for 14-point first half for him. And good overall scoring from him in a night where they maybe did need it, but it got a lot of good looks. And then you go to the bench, Jordan Clarkson, a 9-15 performance for 24 points, just hit a lot of tough shots. Another good kind of interesting shooting performance for him. Also had 5 boards. And then the guy that I think was maybe the most interesting was David Nwaba, at least coming off the bench. 27 minutes for Nwaba, 7-9 from the field, 2-2 from three. 18 points, 5 boards, 2 assists, and a steal. The Cavs are asking some interesting things of him. He's playing the 4 a little bit. He's obviously a little bit small for that position. The shots against him now would be kind of crazy, honestly, if he went 2-2 from 3 in a game the rest of the year. But credit to David Nwaba for driving to the rim, to getting a nice dunk in, to just finishing at the rim, to playing a really, really complete game, and I think showing you why he should be playing in the rotation and why he should be getting some minutes. Cavs were 24 points off opponent turnovers. They scored 44 points in the paint. They had a shooting percentage above 60%. They played fast. They played hard. They played together in a way that they haven't always this season. And yes, like they and I think in the fourth, they withstood a 7-0 run to start the quarter for Charlotte, ended up winning that quarter by 5, win the game 113-89. The Cavs are obviously, I think, going to end up being very bad. Games like this are going to be few and far between. But this was really, really fun. This was just a team that had not looked this good at all this season. They picked up a win at home, their second win of the year. 2-5 at home, 2-11 on the year overall. Beat a Charlotte team that beat them by 32 not that long ago. And they got good contribution from the guys that you sort of would want to see it from, and got just exciting moment from these guys. Sexton alone, just scoring the way he did in some points of the rim and getting to the rim the way he did was really impressive. Hit two threes as well, which is kind of nice. And the cherry on top of this was Channing Frye comes in late in the fourth, only plays 3 minutes, the lowest total on the team. But he makes 2 3-pointers, gets a standing ovation. The guys on the bench are absolutely loving it. Just a really cool moment for him, who's not played much this year, has obviously kind of been out of the spotlight and been the veteran we haven't heard very much from, but he's beloved here. You saw that in this game. You saw that at the queue. Just a really, really cool moment on a really cool night. Easily the most fun Cavs game of the season. If you're looking at who, if you're looking at the one downside of this, Ante Zizic just didn't do anything in his 6 minutes, had 3 turnovers, took 1 shot, missed it, had 3 boards. He's not really forcing Larry Drew's hand, and I think Nwaba should be ahead of him. Andrew Harrison was fine, had 2 assists, 2 rebounds, did make a shot, 0-2 from 3 as well. So kind of an it performance from it, but fine for what they're asking him to be. But it's just a fun time, at least for one night, for the Cavs to go and do something like this. The jerseys that they wore in this game, the New City jerseys, are still garbage, in my opinion. I love the color scheme, bad design, ugh. But they seem, maybe these jerseys just have some good mojo. And just everyone on this team, basically since the two guys we kind of talked about played well. And I don't think you could ask for a much better performance from the Cavs. Charlotte obviously took 41 threes, only made 8. The Cavs took almost half that number, but made 13. That math advantage ended up mattering. They will not shoot that well from 3, you know, very often the rest of the season. But Tristan being as good as he was, Sexton again showing some progress. He's having 17 points, I think, over the last 3 games. JR looking healthy again, or at least competent again. Hood having that good first half. You go down the list from Thompson all the way down to Nwaba. Basically, everyone on this team had a good game, and you couldn't say that much this year. And again, they handled that resiliency in the fourth quarter in a very important way. I think them just responding from a 7-0 run from Charlotte to start the fourth was really a big deal and a really big thing for them to just stave off a potential loss. I mean, you just go on Twitter. I think you saw Cavs Twitter looking at this as like, they're going to blow this. They're going to cost themselves a game they should win, but they didn't, and that's awesome. And it's still going to be a lottery season. It is still going to be rough more often than it is good. But games like this are fun. This is the most fun, again, that this team has been all year. And it was just kind of a nice thing to see. You're going to hear on the way into the second segment from Larry Drew and his thoughts on the game and just how much he seemed to enjoy it. Then they're going to be back to look a little bit at Tristan Thompson and some silver linings of the Cavs season so far. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers.
We haven't been in this situation all year, you know, to where we've gotten the lead and been able to sustain it. And at the end, you know, pull guys out and put guys in, giving them a few minutes. But no, that felt good. You know, it really felt good. I really hope I can have more nights like this.
And we're back. So if in this segment we're going to be talking about something positive on this season or kind of in the last week. And I kind of am going to just cover one guy mostly this week. We'll talk about a couple small things. But for me, the big positive of this season is Tristan Thompson. If you would have asked me what I thought the positive was going to be at this point in the year, let's say end of October or before Kevin Love's injury, at the start of the season, let's say, I would have said Kevin Love just putting up some really wacky numbers that are just way higher than he did with LeBron, and they at least are having some fun moments with him. Maybe Sexton breaks out. Maybe Osman breaks out in an interesting way. That's the kind of stuff I was on the lookout for. And then things obviously got really bad. They started 1-11. Tristan was kind of visibly getting frustrated in some of his post-game interviews. Kevin Love goes down. Sexton struggles, and there's some of the reporting out there that the veterans weren't a fan of him. Now Jetty's hurt. Decker's hurt. Korver's been in an odd lineup. You have all these different issues. Ty Lue gets fired. Like, there's just been so much that has happened already, and we're functionally a month into the season. Couldn't have seen any of that coming. Also, really did not see Tristan Thompson having this kind of season after what he was last year. It is, look, he is a player that was essential to the 2016 title team. He will go down in my mind just because of what the JR hits a shot in that game and Kyrie's shot and LeBron being LeBron. He's going to go down as an overlooked guy in the 2016 title team, I think, unfortunately. But he also was just, he struggled last year. He was injured for the first time. His shooting went down from 60% in 2016-17 all the way down to 56.2 last year. His free throw shooting drops below 60% again. His rebounding in, you know, 9 less minutes a game, but it goes from 9.2 a game overall in 2016-17 down to 6.6. Averaged only 5.8 points last year. Just didn't move as well. Didn't switch as well. At the age 26, he just looked kind of worn. And, you could look at just the him playing 82 games from 2012-2013 every year through the end of the 2016-17 season. Gets that Ironman streak. Had the playoff runs, all that. In the last year, he plays a career-low 53. The only time he played close to that was as a rookie when he was 20 and completely raw and new to the NBA and spent some time in Canton, if I'm not mistaken. Did not look like a healthy guy, and I think it'd be fair to wonder what his future was really going to be if he couldn't rebound it anymore, if he wasn't the same energy level, wasn't doing the kind of stuff that he was going to be. And it's also not as if Tristan ever developed an offensive game in a meaningful way. This is a guy that had the famously Jenkins story about him switching shooting hands, and it didn't really matter. It didn't really make him a shooter in any way. He has a very limited offensive game, and even this year when he's been really good, he's only shooting 52.8% from the field. And shooting 52.6% from the line. I mean, incorrectly, I said that his free throw percentage in 2016-17 was above 60. It was below 50, actually, but it's still pretty bad last year. But this year, Tristan has just looked as close to we've seen him since the 2016 finals as we've seen him since. He's switching just much better, moving with guards much better, has that sort of energy and that spryness and that mobility in his hips back. It's a guy that is rebounding just well. Just look at what he did against the Hornets. He absolutely just dominated Charlotte in that game. They had no big that could really handle him. He was getting to spots that he wanted. He was getting all the boards that he wanted. He was getting the type of offensive junkie boards that he's really known for and that makes him so valuable. He was not doing that last year. It's why Larry Nance was sort of viewed as a successor to him, but it's turned out that Tristan's still a lot better than Larry Nance right now. And as a leader, they've needed him. It has been really fun to look at Tristan and how he's grown up. If you just look at his career, he came in the league at 20, was the number two guy in that draft class behind Kyrie for the Cavs, the number four overall pick, was completely raw, and it took a long time for him to develop. He hit his peak in that 2016 finals at age 24. He's now 27. This is his eighth NBA season already. And he's just matured in a way that it's really, really kind of just fun to see. And he's the one guy from that post-LeBron era that's still around. Remember, Kyrie's gone and is a little bit tad younger than Tristan. Deion is obviously in Miami now. Anthony Bennett, I don't even know where Anthony Bennett is now. Wiggins is obviously Andrew Wiggins is being a way overpaid player with the Timberwolves. Tristan Thompson has developed into this veteran leader that has some savvy, that has been very blunt in speaking to the media, which I very much appreciate. I like when guys are that blunt, even if you know he has kind of spoken to more cliches lately. And he seems to be the leader of the team right now. At the very least, he is the emotional center of this team. On the court, you also see him calling out plays, calling out schemes, getting guys in the right place. He's talking about what this team needs. He's talking about what he learned from the title run and wanting to compete. And I just love that we've got that Tristan Thompson back in our lives. This is a guy that's fun to cover. His game is ugly. His game is not, you know, a modern big game by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it has a lot of value. And it's just cool to see a guy bounce back like that. Again, it is 12 games, and we do not know exactly what his future really looks like, if I can keep this up for a couple more years, how long he'll be with the Cavs, all these things. We'll see if he can keep this up the rest of the year. But he's been the Cavs' best player this year. Would have been I would have called you crazy if you would have said that coming in. But that is just one of the fun things about this Cavs team. And to me, the big silver lining of the year is that Tristan Thompson's kind of back. And at least he's shown that he can be this type of player again. He's averaging 10.2 points and 10.2 rebounds a game as of Wednesday night. So that will likely change based on his performance on Tuesday. But he has just been awesome, and it's really, really fun to see. The other silver lining kind of going on right now is that Colin Sexton's kind of turning it around, and he's been really fun again. He hit that low point in the Orlando game when the reporting came out. He did his first start, and he's been nothing but fun since. He's averaging 17 points, looks more confident, looks more comfortable. Isn't, like, blowing anyone away just yet, but he's getting better, and he's getting kind of chill in real time. And I also would want to just say Larry Drew, I think, has done some – done some really good work with the team. I don't necessarily think he's the right coach for the long term. I would argue that what Kobe Altman's and the front office is going to do is much more important to the team's success than what Larry Drew, whatever coach, is going to do, just because that guy is going to be responsible, or that woman is going to be responsible for building the roster and shaping the culture of the team and getting the right guys in to rebuild the correct way. But Larry Drew has done a really good job of what could have been a messy situation, what was a messy situation, and seeming to at least have the buy-in from the locker room. Guys like Kevin Love trust him, Tristan trust him, all the vets seem to trust him. The young guy seems to have his respect, and he's a very just kind of calm guy. He's a very patient guy. He's willing to try some things and be a little experimental and adjust, and he's made the right adjustments in terms of scaling back the defense and in terms of kind of the right lineup adjustments. We'll see what happens when he gets everybody back and sort of what he does there. That'll be an interesting question for him. But he took over a team that was just a complete mess, that the locker room was a pretty bleak place at that point in time to be around and to be in as a media member. He has the negotiation with management and Sexton struggling, and he goes out and defends his young point guard and gets the situation calmed down, and the Cavs just have their big win of the season. And you could see in that clip you heard him coming into the segment how just excited he was about that win. So he, to me, has been a silver lining. They made the right – I think Ty – if there was no coming back between Ty and the front office, maybe he had to go. It's tough. It's not a good look to ever fire a coach that early in the year, and it's a weird thing. But maybe it just had to be done. Larry Drew, at least, was the right guy to come in to stabilize what was going on and what was a chaotic situation, to have the trust of the veterans who are still around and are, you know, maybe some of them are gone by the deadline, but they're here right now, and they're part of establishing your culture, and they're part of your environment for your young guys. You need to have their buy-in and to not have them causing chaos, and Larry Drew has come in, and it seems, at least right now, even with the losing, even though guys are frustrated, they're playing harder, they're playing more together, they are improving game to game, and they just beat the crap out of a good Hornets team at home under Drew's leadership. So kudos to Larry Drew, and he is another serious silver lining on the season. So I think the big three for the year so far is that Sexton is improving, that Tristan's been really, really good, and that Larry Drew has really, I think, done a nice job as the Cavs head coach and deserves a lot of kudos for what he's done. Jordan Clarkson's play is actually the fourth one, and I wouldn't have said that coming into the year there, so it tells you that maybe I just don't know very much. But you're going to hear Larry Nance Jr. from Tuesday against Charlotte talking about what Tristan's meant for the locker room on the way into the third segment. And then we're going to hear from Ben Mahitch from Bulls Forever and the Step Back about Wednesday's Cavs-Wizards game. So stay tuned, and you'll next hear me and Ben talking about Cavs-Wizards. But here first is Larry Nance Jr. on Tristan Thompson.
He's been big time for us, you know, both on the court and off. You know, he's obviously, you know, we know the numbers putting up on the court. He's been outstanding and you know, been a leader for us there, but more so off the court and in the locker room. You know, guys, younger guys, pretty much everybody needed, needed a voice, needed a force, and you know, he's taken part of that role, and he's been the leader we're looking for. You know, he's been an awesome veteran, you know, just as all the other guys are, but, you know, he's been outstanding.
Joining me now is a writer from Bullets Forever and the Stat Pack. It is Ben Mihich. You can find him on Twitter at Ben Mihich. That's M-E-H-I-C-N-B-A. Ben, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. I mean, it's going just as well as it is for you, being that you cover the Cavaliers. So I don't know if we can say it's going well, but it, you know, it's going. It's business as usual, I guess.
It's sort of fitting that these two franchises, these two teams that have this weird rivalry dating back to the first LeBron era, are sort of in their own ways both very chaotic. But I want to look at this Wizards season. What has gone wrong? What to you is the main reason or two that the Wizards have just been bad this year?
You know, I hate to point to reasons that aren't quantifiable, but I think this team has been overly confident from the get-go. I mean, obviously John Wall came in, I guess a tad out of shape or in a different sort of shape. He put on some or some mass. These guys, I don't think they were very prepared for training camp. Obviously missing Dwight Howard for all the training camp and preseason didn't help, but I think ultimately you know, their personalities, and they were overly confident, and obviously it hasn't translated to wins. This is an entitled group. They think they're a lot better than they are, and they think they can get away with out-talenting teams, but there's really, you know, one or two teams in the NBA that can do that, and the Washington Wizards aren't one of them, and now they're paying the price. You know, they think they can take plays off on defense and not move the ball on offense and get away with isolation basketball and being down by double digits constantly and thinking they'll, you know, prevail by, you know, again, just out-talenting teams, but that hasn't paid off thus far, and it hasn't in the past. But again, this is really just business as usual. This is what the Wizards have had trouble with since John Wall was picked in 2010, and really even prior to that. This is the culture that Ernie Grunfeld has built since he took over in 2003, so we really shouldn't have expected any difference. So again, probably nothing quantifiable. This team has talent. They should be better defensively. They're the worst rebounding team in the NBA. It's just, you know, this team just isn't doing it, I guess.
Who to you, where does this stem from? Like, does this stem from John Wall? Does it stem from the Beal Wall partnership? Does it stem from just the way they've built the last couple years? What's usually the root cause of the issues that they're having this year?
I think it's deeper than that. It's a little bit of everything. Wall was an All-NBA defender, I think it was 3 years ago, and he just doesn't really play much defense anymore. He moves less without the ball than I think any player in the NBA, or the moves the slowest without the ball, at least. I think the only player that moves less or slower is Dirk Nowitzki, which is saying something because the Mavericks are basically playing a corpse at this point, and John Wall's 20 years old, should be in the prime of his career. Scott Brooks has never been a great offensive or defensive coach, really. He was known for his player development. The Wizards really haven't gotten much of that, and now they're kind of just stuck with the coach who's not great at making adjustments, isn't really great with X's and O's, and you know, he's been kind of afraid to make lineup changes. And obviously Ernie Grunfeld, being there for, you know, well over a decade now, has never won 50 games. The team hasn't won 50 games since 1979. So I think it's just a mixture of all of that. I don't think you can point to one thing where if it was different, it would fix all of their problems. Unfortunately, just, you know, a concoction of all of the issues that they've dealt with in the past, presenting themselves in a way that it hasn't before, I guess.
What if any, is the solution? They're 3-9 as we record this on Monday, November 12th, so things could change by the time you listen to this, listeners. But what is the solution for the Wizards to at least salvage the season to some degree, or in your mind, is that possible?
I think salvaging the season would be hitting the restart button, because you don't want Ernie Grunfeld to make any deals at this point. I think he should have right years ago. And you don't want to tank by trading John Wall and Bradley Beal and have him make the pick again, because, again, he should have lost that right long ago after picking Jan Vesely sixth overall and trading the Steph Curry pick, and the list goes on. I think the move that the ownership should make, if they really want to show their fan base and show the team that they're ready to move forward and ready to seriously compete, is to get rid of Ernie Grunfeld mid-season, which I guess is, you know, typically uncharacteristic of NBA teams to do. But we saw the Suns fire their GM before the season began. So I think they should fire Ernie Grunfeld, have Tommy Shepard interim, and then probably get rid of Scott Brooks and, you know, start the rebuild process from there, because the core as it's currently constructed isn't winning games. John Wall and Bradley Beal have been together for 7 years. I think they've had 5 years of Wall, Beal, and Porter, and the best they've gotten out of it was pushing the Boston Celtics to game 7 in the second round. And if the second round is where you plateau, it's probably time to start, you know, start fresh. And that starts with the management. You know, 15 years isn't enough sample size, and he's yet to build a contender. So I don't know if the season is salvageable, and if it is, what does that really mean? Does that mean sneaking into the playoffs and getting kicked out of the first round again like they were last year? Does it mean making the second round? I don't know if that's enough, especially having the same core for, you know, a half decade now, if not more.
Has there been anything for you observing this team that has been fun? Has there been anything about this Wizards season that has been at least interesting for you, and aside from all of the bad and all of the sort of the drama surrounding this group?
You know, Chris, that's probably the most painful thing about covering the season this year is John Wall is usually the light at the end of the tunnel. He plays hard. He'll give you an awesome play or two, and the team's going to be competitive no matter what when he's on the floor. But he seems dejected, and he's not playing hard anymore, and he seems to have resigned himself to the fact that, you know, this probably isn't going to work out. I might end up in, you know, a bigger market or a town where, you know, I can go out to cooler places than Rose Bar in Washington, D.C. He's usually, again, the guy that you look toward for the fun factor and a reason to, I guess, come back and watch the Wizards, but he hasn't been that this year. I guess if I can point to one player, it's been Kelly Oubre. He's consistently brings energy. He plays really hard. And I guess Jeff Green, too. He's been surprisingly pleasant. There's kind of a narrative around Jeff Green that, you know, he's not very good. He's a journeyman at this point. He never really panned out the player that everyone thought he would be coming out of Georgetown. But he's been consistent. He's been scoring the ball. He plays with energy. And honestly, at this point, that's a lot more than you can say for 13 of the 14 guys on the roster.
So that you actually bringing up Jeff Green actually was my next question, because Cavs fans, I think, have a kind of a love-hate relationship with him. And I think covering him, I have, as someone looking at him as a player, I have a give and take with him, because he's a guy that is, every time I talk to him, very nice guy, first, very good human being, well-liked in the locker room, obviously has great athleticism, can actually defend decently well, cuts well. When he shoots threes, it's tough because teams give him to him and he does take them. But every other game or every five games or something, he'll throw down just a bananas dunk, and he does things that are positive, and teams do tend to trust him. It's as much as he gets ragged on and has been ragged on NBA Twitter, he's a guy that has been on some good teams, and LeBron trusts him, and the Wizards obviously went to him, and I think he was happy to kind of come home to his native DC this year. But so what has for you the Jeff Green experience kind of been like, and does he seem like he's been affected at all kind of by going from one dramatic situation to another?
I mean, I think it's different contextually, because the Wizards are such an albatross and not good in basically every sense. They're not a good defensive team. They're a horrid offensive team. They're just quite literally not good at anything. So when you have a guy like Green who will give you really solid production half the time he's on the court, that's a lot more than you can say for a lot of the players on the roster. So I think contextually and situationally it's a little bit different. So I think overwhelmingly he's been positive. He's been knocking down open shots. He plays really hard. He usually makes the right play. And that's, again, a lot more than you can say for most of the players on the roster, including the maxed out players. So far, so good for Jeff Green. And you know, I heard today that the 76ers might be looking to acquire him, and as with the other role players on the team. So he might prove to be a good addition for someone else, given that he was only on a one-year veteran minimum deal in Washington.
Yeah, kind of was in the same situation as Cleveland as well. Last thing we'll ask, just when you look at Wednesday's game, is there a particular matchup or particular thing that you just kind of you're looking forward to in this game? It's obviously a game that, record wise, these are two of the worst teams in the East, both really struggling in their own ways. Cavs are on the second half of back to back. But anything you're looking forward to seeing on Wednesday?
And it's just, I guess, at some point, Dwight Howard should be fully integrated. The Wizards have some energetic bigs. Tristan Thompson is known for his rebounding. Larry Nance is there too. I know that they've been playing together a bit this year. So just, I guess, seeing how the bigs match up with Cleveland's bigs, if they're able to outlast their tenacity rebounding. But besides that, I guess John Wall, Colin Sexton, to see how he matches up with the rookie guard. He usually struggles to guard younger players, and in general has been struggling to guard this year. So I think, you know, it'd be foolish to call it a trap game given how bad both teams have been, but I could easily see the Wizards losing by double digits this game simply because they just haven't been playing very hard this year. So I guess it's a fairly uneventful game, and I'd be surprised if you couldn't get tickets for this for like $10, to be honest with you, on StubHub. But you know, it's a game that we'll be watching because we're masochists, and that's what we do.
Yeah, if the Cavs win this game by double digits, even with the Wizards' struggles, that would be a wild turn of events. That would be very shocking for a number of reasons. But you can find Ben's, again, Ben's writing is at Bulls Forever, SB Nation's Wizards blog, and at The Step Back, which is a great site that is in the Fan Site Network. You can find him on Twitter at BenMahickNBA. Ben, thanks so much.
Cool. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it, man.
So that's going to be it for today's show. Thanks again for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for Wednesday, November 14th. Back tomorrow, recapping Cavs Wizards and doing our first Tactics Thursday with Mike Zavgano from For This Run and Dime X. We'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening. Cheers.